Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Praemium Investment Leader Series podcast. This program is brought to you by Praemium, one of Australia's leading investment platforms. We bring to you thought leaders from around the investment and funds management industry, and today's program will focus on responsible investing. Whilst there's been a growing trend in recent years, a number of natural disasters has brought this into the forefront for investors' minds. In today's podcast, we'll talk about ESG research on companies and how Praemium has incorporated this into our platform to allow investors to tailor their portfolios for their own specific ethics and values. Today, we have Marco Sepulveda, who is Senior Associate with Sustainalytics. Marco has worked with a number of companies and government agencies as a sustainability analyst and now applies his experience in this space to deliver ESG research solutions to a range of users. He has a Master of Environmental Science and a Bachelor of Commerce from the University of Queensland. Marco, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Damien. Good to be here.
Thanks. Before we get into it, I was looking you up and I saw on your work history that you worked as a sustainability advisor for the Port of Gladstone there in Queensland. It's one of the largest shipping ports for minerals in the world. That would have attracted a lot of public scrutiny and kept you very busy. So what was some of the highlights of working there?
So that's an interesting question. Good old days. So I was actually the first sustainability advisor that the ports ever had. So it was definitely an interesting experience. The highlights would have been, you know, creating the sustainability policy, energy and climate policy. As you've mentioned, highly sensitive environment, highly scrutinized industry. So, you know, there was a lot of work being done in terms of, you know, marine safety and habitat protection, air quality controls, energy efficiency management and investment programs, a lot of fuel efficiency programs in place given the fleet of heavy machinery that the port operated. And we're also going through a bit of an expansion, a few expansion projects that posed some challenges as well. But overall, significant learnings and progress done at the ports. So I'd say those were valuable experiences that we can now share with our institutional client base.
Yeah, it's a wonderful background and it would have been an amazing experience, especially being the first one of breaking ground there, if you will, for sustainability. So that's it's wonderful background that you can bring into your current role. So now getting into your current role, you're working at Sustainalytics. So ESG research, it's becoming more and more prominent and now a real significant part of our investment industry. So just give us a bit of background on Sustainalytics and tell us about the history of the group.
Absolutely. So Sustainalytics was founded almost 30 years ago, and we're currently the largest independent provider of ESG research. We have, I think our headcount is currently sitting at around 750, with over half of the team dedicated exclusively to research.
Wow.
We have 17 offices globally. Here in Sydney, here in Australia, we're based in Sydney. We're a team of soon to be seven. And the reason why we have such a widespread office presence and large client team is to make sure that our research is contextualized for our local clients, to make sure that that's those insights are contextualized and relevant for our local clients and our global clients as well.
Yeah, fair enough. And now you've got 350 research analysts, so you can cover a lot of research with that. I understand you do coverage over about 16,000 companies. But you tell us about the kind of specific layers of research that you do, because there's a lot of nuanced work that I imagine you're doing for different users.
We have different research types, and depending on that research type, that kind of drives the research process and agenda. But broadly speaking, we conduct ongoing research on ESG, which is our flagship research type, and we also conduct research on product involvement, which is the work that we've started doing with Praemium recently. And the product involvement research process entails and a review of 26 different types of activities that businesses can be involved in, which investors might be sensitive to and want to screen out. And the update cycle is effectively, we have a product involvement research team that's looking exclusively at whether companies are involved in these 26 activities, which include aspects like cannabis, gambling, controversial weapons, tobacco, fossil fuels, etc. And it's an annual research process that's adjusted on a quarterly basis based on index rebalancing and taking into consideration corporate activity like mergers and acquisitions and the like.
Yep, no, very good. And so as you touched on, Praemium has recently integrated your research into the platform, specifically that product involvement research, which we did a lot of work on and were quite impressed by the breadth of coverage and how that all works. So can you tell us about specifically on the product involvement research, your research process, and how investors can incorporate that to tailor their own ethics and specific values?
Absolutely. So at the essence, the product involvement research is looking at two things. The first, whether there's any involvement in these activities. And the second is, if there is involvement, how much revenue is actually generated from involvement. So involvement can be direct or indirect. So for example, if we're looking at something like tobacco, we can be looking directly at tobacco manufacturers or indirectly at companies that, for example, supply the rolling papers for tobacco manufacturers. Yeah. So we're looking at direct and indirect involvement, and we are identifying how much revenue is derived from these activities. Mm. And effectively, to give you a sense of what the revenue ranges look like, they start obviously from zero, and they go from zero to five, 5 to 10, 10 to 25, 25, 50, 50 to 100.
Yep.
And effectively what the research enables our clients to do is identify the amount of revenue that the company generates from this specific activity. And depending on the values and beliefs and strategies of the clients, to actually screen out companies depending on the level of comfort that they have with that particular activity.
Yep.
So maybe just to give you a bit of a ballpark figures, tobacco is one that our clients are highly sensitive to. So generally speaking, there is zero tolerance to tobacco. There's other screens like adult entertainment, which is a bit more, there's a bit more flexibility.
Yep.
From the perspective of, understanding who's exposed to it. So as an example, hotel groups are exposed to it, given that they effectively sell the possibility of paying to view adult entertainment.
Right. Yeah,
if you set the screen at 0% tolerance, you'd be screening out these types of businesses. So
pay TV operators would be another one.
Exactly,
too.
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There is some nuances in setting these ranges, but that's how our clients are using them.
Fair enough. And getting back to on the research process, I imagine it'd be analyzing company accounts. That would be the best way to do that. There wouldn't be too much forecasting work. It'd be off actual, I'm assuming, as all the half yearlies and quarterlies come out, and then you can update your research that way there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So for companies that actually report explicitly how much revenue they generate from a particular activity, that's revenue percentage is provided as a discrete figure.
Yeah.
For companies that don't report specifically on revenue generated from the activity, we provide an estimation.
It might be clustered together sometimes very difficult to break down.
Exactly right. Yeah. So, our research team are our specialists on this, so they can provide estimations on, where that revenue generation would sit.
Yeah, and I imagine you need to have a lot of ongoing dialogue as well, or some dialogue with companies to actually gain clarification on some of these things.
So through our different research processes, we actually have dialogue with the companies that we cover. Yes.
Yeah, fair enough. So getting on specifically now, as we mentioned earlier, Praemium's launched an ESG product involvement screening service. We're allowing investors by the click of a button to input their own specific values over their portfolios. So we have 9 categories that we've looked at there. We expect that there'd be 1 or 2 is the typical usage that we've seen from people, not necessarily all 9, because everyone's ethics are different. But you like to just kind of talk through the 9 filtered themes, if you will, that are in the first launch of this service.
Yeah, look, absolutely. So just listing them here is animal testing, alcohol, gambling, adult entertainment, tobacco, controversial weapons, and a handful of fossil fuel screens that I believe we'll be discussing later. And look, broadly speaking, they're relatively self-explanatory. You know, when we're looking at alcohol, we're looking at, you know, who produces alcohol beverages, who's distributing, gambling, you know, relatively straightforward, who are, you know, the companies exposed to these activities, who are the companies that are manufacturing the pokies machines, et cetera, et cetera. Again, we've spoken about adult entertainment and tobacco as well. And look, controversial weapons is a delicate one that is looking at companies that are actually involved in manufacture and distribution of weapons that are disproportionate impacts on humans. So that's also a very common screen that's used by our clients.
Yeah, and I imagine with a lot of Australian companies, you know, we'll talk on the CO2 and the fossil later, but in terms of say tobacco, there's not too much direct tobacco stuff in Australia, or you know, controversial weapons, but offshore there is. And we're seeing a lot more portfolios of people investing offshore. So it does become quite significant where there are a lot of tobacco companies, for example, listed in the US. And it's a big part of our global investing, definitely. But we were talking about materiality before. I think that's one element, you know, direct and indirect. So these are some of the permutations that do come through in this product involvement research. Can you just kind of expand a little bit on direct and indirect and materiality as well? And, you know, in some cases, you know, we've been looking at this topic here. Zero does provide a lot of certainty and clarity on it, but it's sometimes it's not as easy to put that through. But so can you run through some of the materiality differences out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as mentioned earlier, the way that the research is conducted is looking at both direct and indirect involvement, and then looking at the degree of involvement. So really looking you know, more deeply at how much revenue the company generates from these activities. Mm-hmm. And if effectively the way that it's used, you know, you've mentioned a zero materiality can is relatively straightforward to apply. It gives you some confidence in the fact that, you know, your portfolio doesn't include these business activities. And I think that we can echo or agree with the fact that some of the screens that Premium has is taking on board actually are used in that way by investors. So, for example, screens like tobacco or controversial weapons, you know, are highly sensitive topics where there's effectively zero tolerance to exposure to these business activities. So that's the way that the majority of our clients are using that. And, you know, when you get into the more nuanced ones on, you know, fossil fuels, which we can discuss later, or gambling and the like, there is some nuances that need to be considered in terms of what you feel comfortable including or not.
Yes.
And I think that's the ability to use those, you know, the different thresholds to understand the impact is probably a recommended approach.
Yep, fair enough. And communication be the key, and trying to support this through and with you know, a lot of disclosure and clarity on it, I think would be very important going forward. When we talk about these product involvement areas, they're such rich topics. We could probably do a podcast on each of them in their own right because there's a lot going on. But I think it's worthwhile kind of delving into fossil fuel in particular. And I think the way that we've approached it, and we had very good dialogue about this, was to break up fossil fuels into 3 subcategories, because it can be, people will have different views on how they want to play this one here. And so with the three subcategories, you know, we've done thermal coal, specifically oil sands, and then oil and gas. So can you run through the differences across the three and probably what's driving people's attitudes in this space? Probably starting with thermal coal would probably be the easiest one to go with.
Yeah, look, that's a good question. And the reality is that there is recognition, there is increasing recognition of climate risk and what that means in terms of exposure to fossil fuels. Having said that, there's different interpretations of risk depending on the fossil fuel that you're talking about. Yep. And that's why we've created those distinctions. So thermal coal, for example, is generally viewed as you know, the least palatable in terms of, you know, there's higher risk, there's competing technologies, it's highly polluting. So that's a relatively straightforward one that our clients are comfortable with excluding to a certain degree.
And isolating in a way.
You know, when you look at oil and gas, it gets a bit more nuanced because, you know, there is a view on, you know, transition fuels. We can't, unfortunately, just, you know,
overnight
go to renewables. So there is an understanding of one, transition fuels, but when you're looking more specifically to oil, the fact that, you know, it's has widespread uses beyond just fuel generation.
Of course, we're within plastics as well.
Exactly
too.
Right.
When you think about plastics, you know, a lightweight kind of material that can also make other, like cars even say, more fuel efficient because they're lighter as a material. So you kind of look at that element as
Exactly right. And then oil sands is interesting. And the reason why there's a distinction there is because the extractive process of oil sands is actually very polluting.
Yep.
And therefore, there are some clients that have sensitivities to the extraction process. And that's why we've created that standalone screen. So whilst they might be comfortable with oil more broadly, you know, unconventional methods of extraction and particularly oil sands might not be something that they want to be exposed to.
And I suppose that's somewhat reflective of, you know, project profitability in oil sands as well too, that because it's so intensive, the extraction process, that it only works at a oil barrel price at elevated levels because there's so much more involvement going into to get it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and oil sands as well. There's not too much. Australia wouldn't have anything by way of oil sands. Where would one go and fight in oil sand projects?
I'd say the epicenter of oil sands is in Canada.
Yeah, fair enough.
The exposure would be. But I think more broadly speaking, you know, when we talk about fossil fuels and we talk about climate risk, you know, you see the trend headed in that direction. You know, so the drive to exclude fossil fuels comes from increasing understanding of risk and how then that's incorporated into portfolios and investment strategies. So there is regulatory pressure.
Yes.
So you see, you know, ASIC and APRA talking openly about climate risk being foreseeable and predictable and how that should be factored in as part of, you know, fiduciary responsibilities. And that's from a regulatory perspective. But then you also see, you know, from the retail perspective, the fact that there is increasing discomfort with being exposed to fossil fuels.
Yep.
So there is a very strong momentum into one, understanding fossil fuel exposure, and two, understanding, you know, what the carbon risks of the portfolio are. And effectively, that leads to a conversation of how it can be improved.
Yeah, correct. And again, I think it's very front and center for Australian investors in particular, because as we touched on, in terms of, you know, tobacco, there's nothing much really in Australia that you're going to invest in that will have a huge impact from a tobacco point of view. But definitely in terms of fossil fuel mining in Australia, it's far more prevalent. And I think, again, people are getting it, talking about it a lot, because they know it will be in Australian-based portfolios. We have a lot of it here.
Absolutely. And just to add to that, you know, there is research that's been put out by the Responsible Investment Association of Australasia, REIA, looking at consumer preferences. And 9 out of 10 Australians actually expect their super and other investments to be invested responsibly and ethically, and 60% expect environmental issues to be factored in. So I think this is only headed in one direction.
Yeah, no, very much. And we agree with that, hence all the work that we're doing in this space. So we've talked very much what we'd call probably negative screening, if you will, that product involvement that clients can take certain themes or products out of their investment portfolios. And that's probably a body of research that's been around for quite a while, and a kind of an approach that's been around for quite a while. But now we're seeing more and more emphasis on positive scoring as well. So it's probably worth, you know, touching onto that piece there, kind of what you're doing in that positive scoring space, and what it means for companies to kind of raise their scoring, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, it's the negative screening approach and research has been in place for a long time, and there's an increasing interest and push from both institutional and retail investors to understand what the exposure of their portfolios is to positive themes effectively. So the way that we approach that is through our what we call sustainable products research. And what the research does is look at 12 social and environmental themes.
Yep.
So things like renewable energy, green buildings, energy efficiency, affordable housing, health. So some very positive social and environmental themes. And effectively, it's the same approach that we apply to our negative screening, which is looking at whether there is direct or indirect involvement in these 12 thematics, and what's the degree of involvement in terms of how much revenue is generated from these positive thematics. And look, what we see is that from the institutional, in the institutional space, the research is being used to understand exposure and to start reporting on how portfolios are actually having this positive impact. And the more advanced institutional investors are looking at using this research to actually create new portfolios and funds that have that, you know, as a core strategy, exposure to these positive thematics. And from the retail side of things, what we see is that it has become a very powerful engagement approach to talk to clients about what they're really passionate and aligned to. So instead of having a negative conversation about what we don't want to be invested in, we're talking about things that's actually matter to them,
yes,
and how they can have a positive impact through their investments. So from a retail conversation and engagement perspective, this has really empowered advisors in having a more nuanced conversation that then generates more stickiness with their clients. Yeah.
So as we head towards the end of the program, Marco, I'd like to ask you about, you know, new trends within ESG research. So many things in the investment industry, they cease to be static, new research, technology, attitudes, etc. So what's something that people haven't been thinking about in particular that you're getting excited and starting to do some interesting research on?
Look, that's a good question, Damien. And I think that the reality is that ESG is moving forward very fast, evolving very quickly. And that's just a reflection of, you know, very large macro trends and societal shifts and technological disruptions. And interestingly enough, we've just produced a thematic piece called 10 for 2020, where we look at, you know, the 10 key themes where we believe investors could capture some upside on some new cool topics. So just to give you a sense of what we're looking at in the report, we're looking at, you know, the 5G revolution, which is really driving that digital and technological space. We're looking at industrial automation and robotics. We're looking at connected medical devices. And one that I particularly like is we're looking at the energy storage, so batteries, and the effect that they're going to have on the utilities and energy sector. And I think that's, that specifically is something that investors should be paying close attention to, or at least that I'm paying very close attention to, in terms of, you know, converging technologies and shifting cost curves that are allowing, you know, batteries to become commercially viable. And that's, you know, also being driven by changes in the automobile sector in terms of the growth of adoption of electric vehicles. And that's also hand in hand tied with other renewable energies and reduction in cost of, you know, kilowatt hour productions from solar and wind energy. So I think there's been historical attention placed in terms of climate risks. I think that there is some significant opportunities that can be captured on this space, on multiple
still
fronts.
More to go on this. Marco, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. This is a great topic, and I imagine we're going to be speaking even more about this in the future. So once again, thanks for coming in, Marco.
Thank you, Damien. Good to be here.